and life for free. But you can get.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom House. She's AV on the board. Andrew Lincoln plus Cinco. S&P futures down 450. NASDAQ futures down 5. Dow futures up 60. I'm sorry, down 68. We had a big up day yesterday after two big down days. So, do we have Brendan?
Yes, I'm here, Chief.
How are you, bud?
This morning?
Doing good. We're just going to give everybody a review of yesterday. Dow was up 580. S&P was up 44. NASDAQ was up 116. So I'm going to say it was a two-thirds, maybe more than two-thirds replacement on the Dow, mostly because of Boeing. S&P and NASDAQ probably two-thirds of Friday's down move. So two horrible down days in a row and one pretty good up day, and now here we are. So what do you think of that?
It seems to be the new normal.
Well, yeah, it is.
It doesn't seem to be really correlated to the news. I'm really surprised. What do you think about the Boeing move, that Boeing is actually flying the 737 MAX again?
Well, they have a bunch of tests, and then they have to spend a lot of time evidently taking the tests into the simulator and in the manuals and stuff for the pilots. So it's very good, but it's doesn't mean they're close. They're closer, but you know what I'm saying? It's not like they fly and they crash one day and they're all in the air tomorrow. Besides, where are they going to go?
No, I know, but it's a first step.
Oh, yeah.
And it seems like this may be a real step.
Oh, I think it is, yeah. I think it absolutely is. And, I mean, clearly you want those planes to be, everybody's retiring everything else, Brendan. If the thing never flies, we got a problem, right?
Yeah.
It's not like there's any alternative. How many Airbuses? But, I don't know. I get this doom and gloom on what's going on here, because everybody I talk to, the news. If I hear much more about these stupid masks, Brendan, I'm like, what are we doing? If you want to wear one for God's sake. But the idea that there's national debate about telling other people what to do, just wear one. Change the thing all the time. Wear a medical grade one. Knock yourself out. It's a whole crazy thing, but. Have you been reading any of the stuff that Carl's been sending us?
I glanced at some of it, but not very thoroughly.
Well, Kevin has been on it pretty good, and it turns out this Elkhart County, of course, the mayor of Elkhart just made everybody start wearing a mask, but the funny part is Elkhart, that's where all the RV plants are, right? Or a lot
of
them.
Yeah.
So they had this huge spike when everybody went back to work. I mean, everybody never really left, but they started to put more and more people in the factories. In the numbers, despite what, I won't say moronic, I'll say our dubious governors and these various states that are taking credit for all this, you know, the numbers going down and so forth. If Carl's right, and you look at these other numbers and the other stuff we're seeing lately is right, nobody's done anything, except somehow or another, and this is from everybody's research on the cruise ship and other places. Somehow or another, 40 to 50% of the population is not affected by this. I don't mean get it and it doesn't bother. I mean don't even get it. And nobody knows why. The same stuff's coming out of Germany, same stuff's coming out of Europe and places as to why there's this immunity of a significant section of the population. And instead of, well, maybe we do, but instead of that being news, nobody wants to tell anybody that, okay? For some reason, instead of that being news and people trying like hell to find out why, you know, whether it's DNA, whether it's blood type, whether you had a cold recently, whatever it happens to be, I mean, I have no idea, but those are some of the suggestions that have been lobbed out there, but other people have no idea. Anyway, that's happening. So if you take the number of that we found out in the Indiana survey and the Spain survey, and actually what the Center of Disease Control guy said the other day, that 10 times as many people virtually everywhere have had it or been exposed to it than the numbers than the testing would indicate. So in other words, if you say it's 160,000, it's really 1.6 million.
Mm-hmm.
Well, virtually every area that now has the cases dramatically dropping, which is Chicago, New York, now Elkhart, by the way, are places that had a huge flare-up. And if you take the 10 times the number reported, plus the somehow 40 to 50 that aren't affected anyway, those numbers start to add up to like 60 to 65% of the population, which is exactly the spot where you start to get herd immunity, and it's in the numbers start to go down in any disease. So it may just be that in those areas that flared early, it had nothing to do with Governor Jay or Governor Bozo in New York that sent people back to the nursing homes and stuff. It had nothing to do with what they did. It had to do with just the numbers themselves. And the fact that they had their spike early, and now they're laughing at people that are having their spike later, thinking, you know, that they did it all right. None of it makes any sense if you look at the numbers, Brendan. I mean, the people in Arizona didn't have a problem early, and now they do. And it appears that when they get to those 60 to 65% number, their numbers will start flying down too. And, you know, and the thing has never been containable from day one. So when an area gets to that point, it should be something we're happy about, not sad.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if the hospitals are not overloaded and we've figured out better and better ways for people to not die. So,
yeah, but unfortunately, I think that it has become politicized. And
yeah.
I didn't see that article that you're talking about with the 40 to 60% of people who seem to have their own immunity. But it has become politicized. Even the fact of whether you wear a mask, whether you want to wear a mask of your own volition or not, has become politicized and causing fights. And it is a sad set of spares.
Well, I mean, it's not really so much the article. It has to do with, you know, that cruise ship that was running around, a couple of them, the one that was running around for 21 days?
Yeah.
Well, and 50% of the people got it. That's all we've heard about is how many people from the cruise ship had it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 50% of the people never got it. And we're living in the same place. So the question is, why? You know, I mean, I don't know why. I mean, it just, and thank God that they didn't. What if everybody was susceptible?
Yes. Yeah, it seems like it needs some more exploration to see what happened with them and why they didn't get it.
I have my own theory, but it's, of course it's useless, but I have one anyway.
What's your theory, Chief?
My theory is that the people with the higher percentage of Neanderthal genes in O blood type, which was Neanderthal, are immune.
Gee?
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Oh. No, I lost you there.
I said I think people have a higher percentage of Neanderthal genes, which would evidently Neanderthals all had the ones they knew, all had O blood type. I think that's why people are getting their immunity.
Well, that's half good news, because I hope that I don't have Neanderthal genes, but I do have O blood type.
I'm going to say, as an Irish person, you have a high percentage of Neanderthal genes. You think I'm kidding?
Well, I guess it depends on what all the negative connotations are of having a Neanderthal.
Well, they're not. I'm talking about like 1.5%. No, it's not like it's, you know, 90 or anything. But it's you know, the only people in the world that do not have Neanderthal genes? African Americans. So all those tests, ignorant people used to do when we were kids to try and prove that like blacks were subhuman. It turns out they're the only ones that don't have subhuman genes.
Chief, you are a wealth of knowledge with all of this kind of information.
Well, you know what got me on this is when our buddy Robert, he took, everybody takes their genetic testing.
Yeah.
Well, not everybody, but a lot of people do. And they all take the one from Ancestry,
mm-hmm.
which lets you know if you're, you know, if you're Irish or you're this or the other thing. And I guess it gives you a pattern. Can you even tell if your father was really your father? Is that the one that goes that deep? I'm not sure. But anyway, he took the one from National Geographic, which doesn't tell you whether you're, but it'll tell you which group you were out of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And evidently, the group that was first out of Africa went through Eastern Europe. They didn't, you would think if you came out of Africa, you'd just go over to Italy or someplace nice, right? They didn't. They went up Eastern, well, they didn't have a ship, obviously. So they went up through Eastern Europe north to, like, northern Germany and crossed over into Britain. So those people, the genes of that group are actually, and that's where, that was the last bastion of the Neanderthals, was in northern Europe. So that's where the interbreeding took place. They were so many years out of Africa, if they ever were even there in the first place, that people in Africa never had any exposure to them. So the only people that aren't running around with subhuman genes that are African Americans. The people we keep trying to say are, which is so bizarre, isn't it? Since all these people have been trying to prove that they were the ones. Well, no, we're the ones. But yet another odd thing in life. But also Robert comes back. You're supposed to be 1 to 1.5%. He's like 2. So of course I've given him no end. And I found all this stuff out because he's been holed up, right? Well, he refuses to come out. So I was digging through the internet trying to find an artist rendition of a Neanderthal guy living in a cave. So when I was digging through that, then I found out all the stuff about blood type and genes and everything. And I'm wondering if what the connection is. I mean, I'm just lobbing stuff out there, which is good as anybody else's at this point. But I think if I was a Center Disease Control guy, I'd want to know why half the people aren't getting this.
Yeah, that seems like a very important thing to find out.
And if it turns out there's no vaccine, the quicker we get to this number in virtually every community, the quicker we can go back to normal. Right? It's not, I mean, if you find out somewhere that 40,000 young kids on a beach are getting it, we should be cheering, not just tell them not to go home to grandma or go visit a nursing home.
Well, that's the problem, because they will go back to grandma and grandpa and Uncle Joe, and that's where people start to die, and that's where it's really bad PR.
Yeah, but why do we think these kids are that stupid? I mean, in our generation, nobody had to tell us if you were really sick not to go to grandma's.
Well, first of all, I think that even in our generation, we did do things like that, like go to grandma's or go to school or go to work if we were sick because of the work ethic. But second of all, it just seems like a lot of people today don't care because they are young and they figure they won't get sick, and if they do, it won't be that bad.
Well, I mean, it was a different. If you had a cold, you figure you got it from somebody. Everybody else has got it. If everybody didn't go to work the minute they got a cold, what would the place look like? I mean, you're not going to die from it. You work your way through it. I mean, this is different, especially if you're any kind of these groups. But we don't really have. If you talk people on the street. They will. And I had an interesting dose of this Saturday because I was in Indiana, and a lot of people there haven't been out of the house. And all they do is like watch the news. And I said, you know, God, you know, this thing is like so deadly. I said, do you realize that in Ohio, 75% of the people died in nursing homes? Well, that can't be true. Yeah, it is. Really? I thought that everybody's dying. No. I mean, there are people, but every day things go by, and these guys get better at it. What did you think of the drug that they're now going to price at $5,000 for a...
Remdesivir?
Yeah.
You know, the funny thing about that is, well, not the funny thing, but that drug has been around for a while. It's not like this was a new thing that they discovered and are distributing solely because of COVID-19. So I have a hard time justifying the cost of this. I mean, it's $3,200 if you have insurance that will cover the bulk of the price. So even with a good insurance plan, it's going to cost you $3,000 or more than $3,000 to get a dose for a couple of months to try to hopefully make this work. That seems incredibly high.
My question is, and since you out of all the people that are on here are closer to government, all right? Then, well, not closer to government now. You're retired, but have been around. Let's say the governmental creatures. Why are they collectively so friggin' ignorant, Brendan?
On which point?
Pick one. I mean, when my mom had, she ended up with, well, long time. She had breathing problems. She had a little bit of lung cancer, and they screwed her up in the operation. Anyway, it was a long, long sad deal. And she was in little company. Which I wouldn't necessarily recommend anybody, but at least in those days. And so the head pulmonary guy, this is when the mesothelioma stuff was like kind of all over the place. And I said to the dude, do you get people in here with mesothelioma? Oh yeah. What do you do about that? What do you mean? We treat them. I said, well, are you or the hospital aware that there are like billions of dollars that have been set aside for damages for these people? Well, yeah, I heard something about that. Well, okay, is there like a form or something that you fill out if somebody has mesothelioma as you're charging Medicare, I didn't say, you know, $250,000 to treat somebody that you know is going to die anyway. Does Medicare recover from that plan? He goes, I don't think so. We don't fill anything out. We don't even tell anybody. Well, Brennan, how ignorant is that? Why, all the people that are harmed from mesothelioma, you would think that the medical care would be the first you'd pay for.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they don't. I don't even think it's in the program.
That is very odd.
Yeah. Well, now, this drug that I have trouble pronouncing, you were better at it with me than me, allegedly, the government, and I don't know the whole history of it, I'll bet Carl, well, when he comes back in, I think a lot of the development was what the government paid for. That's all I was reading last night, and nobody ever, I read three articles and got tired of it. I never had, if somebody knows, because a lot of listeners send me really good stuff, if somebody knows exactly what the government involvement was, I mean, I'd love to know. I mean, why aren't, have these guys been issued a patent, or are they just a monopolist at this point? Is this thing still under patent?
Well, at this point, I'm sure there's a patent for it, because it's been on the market for a while, and it's treatment for other illnesses. So I can't believe that it's, well, I know it's not a new drug.
Yeah, but it's not
but
been
it
seven.
It has to go through the clearances to be released.
But it's not been 17 years. It's somewhere
in
the middle.
No, it's not. It has not been 17 years. Although, as you know, what often happens now when you have patent protection is you tweak it just a little bit in order to get it extended for another 17 years.
Well, it's hard to do that.
You get like an extra drug.
You get like an extra couple of years. It's hard to get all 17, I think. They managed to get two with Viagra. They got the other one 19.
Mm-hmm.
How? I have no idea, but they did.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I mean, does the government ever take ownership to any of this stuff?
Well, they don't, because you've got competing interests there that are trying to serve their own lobbied interests, and that's a big part of the problem of government in trying to be too fair and too equal. Often does just the opposite and creates a lot of inequities.
Well, I often wondered on the idea of sports teams and how exactly the Bears don't even want to get into, but the White Sox. We're going to build you the world's finest office building, and we're not going to charge you rent for, like, ever. Oh, man, mm-hmm. That's cool. Well, wait a minute. Now we own 25% of the company. And how does that conversation not take place?
Well, you know, sports teams are really interesting, especially I'm interested that you brought up the White Sox because of Guaranteed Rate Field, which is really Sox Park, otherwise known as Comiskey, to those of us from the south side. You know, that was built with government funds, and a lot of sports stadiums across the country were built at whole or in part with government funds, which, you know, you think about how few times baseball stadiums are used a bit more than, say, football stadiums or basketball arenas, but how many football stadiums are built for, what, 12 games a year where the home team is there?
Well, nobody worth anything will be part of a multi-use stadium now. You got to be your own place.
Everybody wants their own. But my point is that it's a huge amount of government outlay. Look at the stadium that was built off in Bridgeview for the Chicago Fire, and now they're playing down at Soldier Field now.
And it damn near bankrupted Bridgeview.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's stupid when you think about the fact that they're not charging the teams a fair amount of money, and the teams are crying poor that they can't afford it. But yet, their owners are making a pretty good penny.
Oh yeah. Well, you're talking about people that are different from you and me. I mean, when people listen to the show and they, unfortunately, Brandon, my mentality and my judgment system comes from two things. One is my Southside upbringing and the nuns and my parents, and second is the trading floor, which most people think was a den of thieves, but in fact was the most honest place on earth.
Mm-hmm.
And the word was your bond. And matter of fact, I had an attorney that we're doing some work with, and he said, okay, that's going to be, to do this work, that'll be like $1,000. And I said, okay, I'll send it to you. And the guy goes, well, no, I need a credit card. And I said, you need what? After 20 years of the trading floor, nobody ever questioned my word. You're not going to be the first, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, but it just, nothing's getting my hair up more than that. Anyway,
yeah.
but, But how is it that, Reinsdorf, one of the things, if you find somebody from the trading floor and said, I had a losing day, it means that he walked into the account with $1 million in his account and walked out with 980. That's a losing day, right? The idea that he lost money because if he'd have moved the White Sox, he thinks he'd have made something somewhere else. He's never had a losing year with the White Sox. He'd lose money there. But who's kidding who?
He hasn't.
But if these guys that are in this upper echelon, their whole definition of words is different than ours. To me, losing means you lost. Not that you think you might have done better somewhere else. Let's see. I had a nobody ever wanted to listen to somebody over a few beers in the trading floor that had made 20 grand in a day, and God, if he just would have missed this one trade, he could have made 25, and he's whining. I mean, how much more can you whine when you just had a big day like that? I mean, you wouldn't even listen to people like that. Yet these guys seem to think that people care, right? Well, I could have done better at Tampa. Go to Tampa. See how it is. You know, how's the guys in Tampa doing? Not so hot, right?
No, they never have done it. But you know, that's a very interesting point too. When you're talking about wanting more money, that's the sentiment that's sinking baseball right now. Whether there's going to be a season or not, and you know, there are several issues about a baseball season. One of which ball players are going to opt out of the season before it even begins. But even if the season does begin, what happens with those who contract coronavirus? And yet, baseball players and owners are just fighting over money, how much they're going to get prorated, how many games they're going to have, instead of saying, if we really want to help the economy, if we really want to get things back to normal, we've got to start playing ball.
Well, I mean, one guy, Zimmerman, he has a family. I guarantee it. Well, I don't guarantee it, but if he gets it and takes it home, the kids aren't going to care. The wife probably won't care that much either. Now, he's got a grandmother, somebody's grandmother, his mother lives with him. What makes him? Why does he even have to go home during the season?
Well, for a long time, they were talking about not having anybody go home but sequestering them in a place. You know, they were talking about having all 30 teams play in Phoenix, in the Phoenix area where they have a lot of spring training facilities, and they're fairly close together. So they were going to isolate them just like they were going to isolate the teams in the NBA. But that was one of the considerations of that for a couple of months. Do you isolate them or do you not isolate them? And the NBA players were balking about the fact that they'd be completely isolated from their friends and family and couldn't go out and dine out or go to the bars after games.
They couldn't go to the clubs and find every girl in town. What a horrible thing to have happen. Anybody.
Well, yeah, but you're also talking about a couple of months here while they're making millions of dollars.
Brandon, could you and I possibly have gone a couple of months without 20 different girls and booze every night? Come on.
Mm-hmm.
What an imposition on 2 years of our life when we're making millions of dollars a day.
Yeah, it seems odd, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a... I don't... How is it, you know, to get back to this... The theme that is the more I read about this, and I've been doing this now for, you know, however many months we've been with, and every day I get stuff from everybody, and I try and read it all. And I am absolutely astounded, Brendan, of how much we either don't know or aren't being told. There isn't somebody was telling me, actually one of the ladies in the office said that the Clemson football team, like, how many was it? I think it's Clemson. They showed up and they got, or they did something and they got, how many of them tested positive?
Is that the team that had like 30 other players?
Yeah, now why, you can't tell me that these guys were just, you know, just hanging around. They must have all been in a cafeteria where somebody didn't wash their hands or something. It's something is really strange for that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's like some of the films they have of people in the bar where, six people at a table got it, and like the rest of the bar didn't. Well, the air was the same in the rest of the bar. Something was going down on that table, on the table, on the glass of something, as Carl keeps saying. Somebody didn't wash their hands somewhere. I mean, where is the hot spot on this stuff? I mean, it clearly isn't just wandering down the sidewalk. They all just didn't walk down the sidewalk together. I mean, is anybody even checking it out, or are we just all talking?
Well, I think there are difficulties with contract tracing to see where they were in the bar. Were they all at the same table? Were they spread around? Do they interact when they go to the bar for their drinks? I mean, there has to be some connection.
Well, bars are easy because there's cameras.
Mm-hmm. I think a big part of the problem is contract tracing. I mean, they can identify the people who are at a bar, but who do they interact with at the bar?
Well, one of my friends who will go nameless is involved in a lot of nursing homes, and they had one of them with a big breakout, and the breakout came from, I think, the person who served all the food trays was moonlighting from a hospital, and he showed up with it. And out of the 55 dinners he served one night, like 40 people ended up getting it.
Wow.
I'm just guessing that that was not air-to-air transfer. I'm just guessing.
I thought that now that the later statistics were that surfaces aren't quite as transmissible as droplets in the air when you're breathing.
They aren't if you touch it and you wash your hands. But if you touch something and you stick your finger in your eye, I think you got a problem. Anyway, S&P futures, we're only up to, down 75 cents now. Dow futures down 23, rallying back here. NASDAQ futures down 125. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks. Thank you, Brandon.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason.
I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. She's AV on the board. S&P futures are now up 4.25. We have, ready to roll here. We were down when we came in, obviously, and when we were mixed last night. Now they're up 4.25, and NASDAQ futures up 9. Dow futures still down a little bit because we have a Boeing down $2 and a couple others that are down, but I'm a feeling we're going to turn to the positive side here. Like David said yesterday, the seasonals are pretty strong week before the 4th of July, plus we had two horrible days last week, so I have a feeling we might be able to carry through the upside from yesterday. Whether we get back all Thursday and Friday, I'm going to say is problematic, but we will find out. DAX up 56.4%, FTSE down 26.4%, CAC around up 8, that's 0.1. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei up 293, that's 1.3%. These guys have been up and down all over the place. Shanghai up 23.8%, Hang Seng up 125.5%. It seems to be totally forgotten of the tiff between China and Hong Kong. I haven't heard about anything about it in weeks. Again, yesterday for review, Dow was up 580, S&P was up 44, NASDAQ up 116. So somewhere between half and two-thirds of what we were down on Friday. So I guess if you're a Fibonacci guy, that's the retracement you're looking for. 10-year unchanged, 0.63%. One minus 0.47. Wow, look at this. Japan plus 0.035. We haven't seen it that high in a really, really long time, like in maybe decades. Oil down 40 cents, 39.30. Brent down 46 cents, 41.25. Natural gas 172, which is a massive move over that, off that 144 low. I'm going to say last Thursday. That's a 25, 30 cents in natural gas is a big number because that's a big contract. RBOB up 1 cent, 119. We've got gold is up $2, 1783. Silver up 5 cents, 1811. AV, what do you guys for traffic, weather, sports? Still not much sports.
Good morning, friends. 73 degrees currently in Chicago. Partially cloudy, but mainly Tuesday will remain sunny. Scattered storms are possible today, mainly across northeast Illinois and northwest Indiana. The highest of the day is expected to be 80 and the lowest 69. No rains at night expected as well. 76 degrees in Phoenix, hot and dry Tuesday. The sky will remain clear and sunny throughout the day. The 100 degrees is the highest of the day and the lowest is 75 in Phoenix. Traffic situation is getting more movement slowly as we continue to move through phases. On Stevenson outbound before Pulaski, a crash blocks the two right lanes. Another crash on I-80 before LaGrange involving a van that rolled over. The right lane is blocked and traffic starts to pick up. Stevenson Expressway southbound is gaining volume as well. Might be some delays. Chief?
Do we have Joel or we have Brandon?
We have everybody.
We got everybody. Hey, Joel, how are you?
Good. I will not...
With the we also have Brandon with us. So
hi Brandon, how you doing?
Brandon, are you there?
One
he's not there. Okay, well we got Joel.
Sorry guys, I was a little bit late today. My producer is going to be out of town on Wednesday and Thursday, so I'm going to be running the ship solo tomorrow and Thursday. So a little extra preparation on my part. But how you doing today, Chief?
I'm doing fine. Remember if you were a DJ by yourself back in the day, how much preparation you had to do?
Yeah.
All the different tapes and
I stuff. Never spun records. I was the guy out there on the dance floor with the ladies.
Oh, God. I used to go on once in a while with one of the stations here in Chicago, and I was, well, actually I used to represent the CBOE at Glenn, and the guy, he loved us, but I'd actually go to the station. I don't think there's anything like that around, maybe in a museum, but they had all these, I think they were 8-tracks of all things, but all these different machines where you do an ad, you do another ad, you do you do your lead-ins before, and all you just do is hit one to the other, and you never had to do anything. So the guy didn't have to say a word till he was like 5 minutes into the show, if you knew what you were doing. I mean, because it was all before. But you're there by yourself. Were the producer. But, anyway, I guess they claim if you really want to know radio in those days, you did overnights because there was nobody there but you. You had to spin the record, you had to do the advertising, you had to take the phone calls, the whole bit. I don't think I'd be up for that. I'd be lost without Matty Weber or AV. So what do you make of the world? We had two horrible days, and then we had a somewhat of a Fibonacci bounce yesterday. Now here we are, and we're going into a 4th of July week that normally creeps up.
A couple different factors going on here. Number one, you got the end of the quarter window dressing, right?
Yep.
So they can dress them up and dress them down. For the last 100 years, they've dressed them up. So you have to look at that. Number two, shortened week for options, right? Because the markets are closed on Friday, and then you have the unemployment number on Thursday. So it's a little bit of a different week. Throw that in with the Russell rebalance last week, and you have a lot of jockeying for position. I think yesterday Boeing saved the market. I mean, plain and simple. We were on the brink of going down. We closed the whole Friday low, and we pierced it overnight. Boeing comes out, very well-timed news by our Congress, and Boeing is just kind of a poster child for the reopening play. And Boeing had a great day yesterday, so that lifts your airlines, that lifts your cruise lines, that's not so much the restaurant stocks, but Boeing saved the day. They're down $1.57 today. There was your catalyst for the rebound yesterday.
What it seems like if you could have gone, if you go back, I mean, I mentioned it yesterday morning. Of course, I didn't make a trade on it, although I was already long, so it didn't really matter. For my clients and I, if we could go back in the last 10 years, though, every time we've had two fairly serious down days in a row, and we opened down the next morning, if you'd have been a buyer at 9:30 or 10 o'clock, how rich would you be? Somehow, some way, in the morning of the third day, somebody comes out. Either the Fed or Europe or somebody or Congress or somebody goes out there and bleats something and we turn it around.
I guess you could apply the two-day rule, to that. Market has a good day or a bad day. It follows through the next day. I think a better strategy of that, whether, it's up, two, down, eight, whatever it is. I mean, trying to buy the futures on the dip overnight or just flat out buying them at the close, is just a great strategy too. Because, we dipped quite a bit last night, couldn't quite get to where I wanted to get long. A lot of these moves you see on the upside take place overnight. And then we just, then the bots come in and the HFTs and, Powell scratches his nose and we move, 15 handles. So a lot of the gains, I can agree in that along the same lines as you're speaking, but man, trying to buy the dip or buy the futures overnight has really been the call. I've seen some statistics on it. I can't exactly quote them, but that's along the lines of what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, but you, in order to do that, you have to have, some protection, some option protection backing you up. You can't.
No, you don't. I put a stop in.
Well, yeah.
I put a stop.
You could be the only guy on earth that could put a stop in and go to sleep.
Why?
Because I don't trust them overnight at all.
Come on, man. The minis, how liquid they are?
I have visions of.
If I get long, even, one thing I have to say, my buddy Dennis, that I do my show with, market structure guru, I mean, he predicted the 2010 flash crash. If anything you can say about the markets is that, during that meltdown, we held up pretty well, even with those limits and all the chaos and everything. So, hey, if I get a couple point slippage, I'm out. right? If you're in a trade and you want out of the trade and you have a stop, you know, sometimes it's better, a better feeling getting out of a losing trade with a little bit of slippage and saying, oh man, I should have used the stop limit. I mean, if I want out, I want out. If I want in, I want in. Whatever. The markets are plenty liquid. So that doesn't bother me. I mean, wake up in the middle of the night and check the quotes or whatever, but that's what happens when you're an old man anyways.
What did, so you're not at all, when you say the markets are liquid, I've learned to stay away, okay, from places that are illiquid, okay? So when if I manage money for people, which I do for a lot of people, I stick with the, I'm going to say, 7 to 8 indexes, ETFs that I know I can trade. Or hopefully we're in some stock that I know I can trade. I mean, which aren't very many. You look at the, but now I'm getting an awful lot of, clients. Well, they are clients. Some are bringing in all kinds of stocks. Half of them I never even heard of, to be honest with you, Joel. And they all got options on them. The markets are abysmal. Abysmal.
That's a different story, Chief. You could drive a truck to... I mean, I've seen some trades where you can't buy the stock. You want to do a short, right? And you look at the options market, and you can drive a truck through it. And I agree with you on that. So you just mentioned two important things. You mentioned option markets and illiquid stocks, right? And also you manage other people's money. I'm not managing anybody's but my own money. So if I get whacked on a stop, I don't have to answer anybody else but myself. So you mentioned two important points there. I mean, you're better off if they have these crazy stocks. I mean, and they really want to own them. You know, try and get some juice and sell some puts and put up the cash against it. Or, because if you're going to buy calls or put on a call spread, something where you can bring in the premium. But even in some of these bigger stocks, gone to put some options on, it's been tough.
Well, when you start talking about, we got to dash here in a sec. But
sure.
Did you read the article? How much money Citadel and these people are paying these firms for this order flow? Anybody who thinks anybody thinks these markets are legit? I don't know. I got a bridge for him.
Well, that's a whole different topic. I got to hop.
All right, buddy. We'll talk about it next week.
We'll talk to you next Tuesday. Everyone have a safe 4th of July. Okay?
You too. Do we have Mr. Kenny with us? We'll just go right to him. Kenny, you there?
Yeah. No, so you have Carl.
We have Carl. What's up, buddy? We thought we had Mr. Kenny Pulcari. We have Carl Denninger.
Well, called me.
You know what? We'll take you because I just got your stuff this morning. And how Kevin was. By the way, Kevin called me last night. We're both watching the Stanley Cup from 2015, like the last time the Hawks were good. You know, so it was Game 6. And Carl, I figured out why they were better. They had a lot more good players.
Oh no, really?
And the really good players were younger.
Was that the difference?
That was the difference. So we're watching him, and he was telling me that in Elkhart County, he was reading the Carl math off, because evidently if you take the 40 to 50% that are, you know, somehow immune when nobody knows why, and you look at and you multiply however the tested cases are by 10, which seems to be the number. Elkhart made it to like 65%.
Yeah, that's spitting distance, if not there, in terms of, and that doesn't mean nobody else will get it, okay?
No.
But it means that the kind of kaboom that everybody fears can't happen anymore.
Well, now, since that has happened in the last several days, the numbers of new infections are dropping like a rock. The mayor comes out and tells everybody they have to wear masks. Now, of course, the mayor is going to take credit for it, right?
I've been in this running war on this now for, you know, the last 3 months. There is no evidence in science that masks work with viruses at all. Okay? In fact, there are multiple random controlled trials, which is the gold standard for anything having to do with medicine, that say that when it comes to viruses, they're worthless. And that includes several in the general population. I have four, in fact, that I've managed to find through the literature, and there's another guy over at SOTNET that found the same ones, and several in healthcare workers. And people like to diss the healthcare worker one because they say, well, but that, you know, the healthcare worker trials were looking at whether or not the healthcare workers got sick. Okay, and the public policy perspective that everyone's trying to push is that the mask doesn't protect you, it protects the other person.
Right.
Okay. So the argument that they make is that you can't use the healthcare worker RCTs. Those are invalid. That's a bunch of BS because infected is infected, doesn't matter who it is. But the, you know, okay, fine, you know, we'll take your nonsense criticism and we'll look for something else. But there's one in particular that I thought was very interesting. It was actually done in a very high density transmission environment, which was a dormitory environment at a college. Okay, now the reason we've been doing these things is that if we could find a way to stop people from getting the flu every year, that'd be big.
Well, yeah.
All right, and so we've been doing these studies for, you know, for the last 20 years or so. And the other thing is we're trying to understand why these same mandates that were put in place in 1918 during the Spanish flu pandemic didn't do anything. We actually threw people in jail for refusing to wear masks in 1918 and 1919, and a couple of people got shot because they got tired of the politicians running their mouths and decided that, okay, I'm going to shoot you in the face instead of putting up with your BS. And they correctly concluded that they didn't work, but they didn't know why. We didn't have a physics explanation. We didn't have a medical explanation for it. We just knew they were not efficient. And as it turns out, the physics says it shouldn't work either because there are enough virus particles in one aerosol of less than 2.5 micrometers to get you infected. And that size of particle goes straight through anything less than an N95. And even an N95, about 45% of them go through.
But to people, it seems so intuitively obvious. It's almost like somebody wearing a bandage or something. If the person next to you is wearing anything, even a stupid White Sox or Cubs mask, that somehow or another you're safer. And it's really hard to break through that.
But see, it's not the case.
I understand that, but I'm saying trying to explain that people are like, how could it not be?
Let me just give you one example. One of the things that's really, really dangerous about these kinds of mandates is that, you know, the science says it should not work. Physics says it shouldn't work. The trials say it doesn't work. Now, here's a rather interesting little experiment I ran in my own house, because I have N95s around here. I use them for sanding and things like this, okay? And, you know, you don't want to inhale the dust. It's bad for you. Okay, fine. So you put one of those things on and then breathe, and you will notice, if you wear glasses, you'll notice your glasses fog up.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, now why do they fog up? Well, because the exhaust air, when you breathe out your nose, that air goes downward, away from your face. Okay? When you have a mask on, that air gets redirected and actually gets blasted up towards your eyes.
Correct.
Now,
yeah.
If you and I are standing next to each other, and that's why your glasses fog up, because your breath has 100% humidity in it. So if you and I are standing next to each other, and I have a mask on and you have a mask on, and you believe that you're getting protected by this, you're actually screwing yourself. And the reason you're screwing yourself is that if you cough or sneeze or somehow otherwise expel a virus particle, and you and I are having a conversation, and I exhale and my breath blows that into my eyes, the conjunctiva in my eyes is a very viable transmission route for viruses.
Oh, God, yeah, yeah.
So what's just happened is, it's like, you know, you take your leaf blower and you blow leaves on the driveway, right? Well, if you blow them into your face, you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah.
and that's what these things end up doing. So when you take a look at the totality of the effects, they don't do anything. They have no benefit whatsoever. And the other thing came out of these studies, though, is that what does work is hand washing.
I would say, yeah. Well, okay.
I mean, the science says it should, but the random controlled trials say it does.
I have my bottle of alcohol, and whenever I come out of a store, and my paper towel before I touch anything in the car, I put it on there and wash off my hands and do the door handle of the truck, and so far so good, Carl.
Well, not with sanitizer. And see, here's the other thing.
Straight alcohol. Sanitizer is rubbing alcohol. I actually found a bottle.
Well, sanitizer doesn't work. And the reason it doesn't work is that these viruses, respiratory viruses in general, are lipid encased. They've got an oil envelope around them. And it takes about 30 seconds for alcohols to penetrate through that and lyse it and get in there and actually destroy the virus. And that would be fine, except, number one, nobody uses them for 30 seconds. Number two, they evaporate too fast. So their hand sanitizers are ineffective, especially in the, 5-10 second, rub, okay, I'm done, I'm good. No, you're not. You haven't done anything. The other thing about hand washing is that most of the benefit actually, people say, it's the soap. Yes, sort of. The soap penetrates that coating. But the most important thing is that the soap and the water frees the particles off your hands and then physically removes them and flushes them down the drain, which you don't get with a sanitizer because you're not flooding the surface.
I would say hand wash would be better. I have two questions for you now that we've got you. Is there any progress whatsoever, and I was kidding earlier, that I'm convinced it's Neanderthal genes and O blood type, why so many people appear to be immune?
No, and the problem with identifying that, it could probably be done. Someone will eventually figure it out. I'm sure people are looking at it. What you have to figure out is what antigen is it that's already in circulation in your body that your immune system and your T cells recognize and key on that make them identify this thing and thus go after it before it otherwise would. That's where the immunity comes from. And we just don't know which one it is. We know there is one, but we don't know what it is.
What questions? I was last night thinking I'd have you back this week sometime. With Friday not being a day, it was tough. So I'm glad to hear you today. Miss Kenny, but he didn't call in last week, so he might still be out anyway. But what questions would you ask? I would ask, have you had a cold recently? And I probably would ask, have you had a flu shot in the last year or two? Maybe it's as simple as people who got this year's flu shot.
Unlikely, because the flu is a the flu A and flu B, which are the big phenotypes, and then you start getting into the little stuff. Influenza A and B are completely different sorts of viruses, so the probability that's cross-reactive is not very high.
I would agree, very early on,
one of the theories was that TB and a handful of other, there were a handful of relatively common vaccines that people might have had that might have cross-reactive protection. But that's kind of gone away because, for example, tuberculosis is something that, is so rampant in the United States. It is in other countries. And so we thought, maybe there's some cross-reactivity there with tuberculosis. And as it turns out, it doesn't look like that's the case. And it's just, as we learn more, we eliminate things like that. My guess is that it's almost certainly a coronavirus cross immunity, and coronaviruses are responsible for about a third of the colds. So it wouldn't shock me if it's a common cold virus that actually provides some of that. And if so, then the immunity is temporary. But then again, most of us get a cold, once a year or thereabouts anyway.
Well, I mean, is the immortal words of John Wayne, where they're trying to take off the airport, where he says something like, Captain, when things are getting this insane, maybe we should look for insane solutions as well. I agree with you. I doubt if it's people who had the flu shot, but if I had a list of questions to ask, why not ask those kinds of questions? It might be something that you and I thought was totally nuts to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, the answer is out there, and it does appear that there is some, there is some sensitivity that is linked to blood type, which I think is fascinating. But then again, there's another interesting thing too that's popped up, which is, now we've got these states that are, that are having these large case surge numbers. And I was listening to one of the medical center folks last night, who had there was a clip that was floating around on the net from one of them, and he was pushing back very strongly against any premise that that there's an overload imminence problem within the health system. He's saying, look, the ICU and the ER and the and the ventilator numbers are this. We are right where we normally are at this time of the year. There just isn't a problem here. Okay, it doesn't exist. He says what we are getting is a bunch of people who come in. They sneezed, and their employer said, "You must go get a COVID test. You can't come back to work until you come get one that's negative." And so, a 20-year-old kid shows up. With grandma swab up his nose. He's positive. Okay. Now the only symptom he had was he sneezed at work. He's not visibly sick, and he says, and a decent percentage of the time, and this was what caught my ear on it, he says, we give the guy a steroid shot and we send him home, and I said, my ears perked up as soon as I heard that, because one of the things that the NIH has strongly recommended against is the use of steroids. Now, of course, we know that we now have this study that says that the use of them in very seriously ill people is cutting the death rate by a third. Okay, and these are people that are in ICU and on ventilators and are expected to die. Using these very cheap IV steroids is saving a third of these patients that would otherwise be expected to not make it. But the interesting thing is, these guys are not coming back. So, they're getting sent home. And then, that's it. Now, the other thing that's interesting about this is that because of the way these protocols have developed in these businesses, that kid's then coming back 2 days later for another test. Okay?
Yeah. They want you to have two negative tests.
Well, and the problem is, are we counting that as another positive if he comes up with another positive test?
I don't know. I know the girl downstairs from me went and had tests, and it was something like 7 days before she found out she was okay. I said to her, after 7 days, you're feeling fine. Would you rather have had it or not had it? She goes, I'm not sure. Right?
That's the thing is that, there are some states where there's enough granularity in the data that here's how many tests they did, here's how many positives they have, and here's how many positive people as opposed to positive tests.
Hey, Carl, would you like to, we have Jeff calling in, but I have a feeling, I would love to have you two guys on together for 15 minutes or so, if you can hang.
Sure.
Because I want to talk about these labor numbers a little bit. And by the way, if you haven't seen the last issue of Luckbox, it's all about, first of all, I'll let him tell you, but it's all about this new monetary theory, and I think you'll be fascinated by it. SP Futures down 2, NASDAQ Futures down 3. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years.
Hey, did you call Kerry and Kenny and tell them we didn't like this?
Virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to ptisecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's ptisecurities.com.
This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But if you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty and the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes, have you been frustrated by the lack of income your investments have provided? If you have answered yes to either of these questions, then we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. So please give me a call at 602-298-1278, 602-298-1278, so that I can explain further the benefits that PTI can offer you and your portfolio.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI ProDirect. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here. What it is.
I want everybody to hear those words, AV. If ever was a time where that song had more, so we say, meaning. There's something happening here where it is ain't exactly clear. Do you think that's pretty fair, AV, what's going on here or what? SP Futures down 3. NASDAQ Futures down 5. We have Mr. Carl Denninger and Mr. Jeff Joseph together. You guys, have, I don't think you've ever met. So this is, Jeff, I was just telling Carl about your latest issue of the magazine, that it's a must read for him and all of us. Anyway, welcome together. I wanted to give you guys like a little bit here of my story with my creatures in Indiana on Saturday night.
Creatures in Indiana?
The people. It's an interesting. My girlfriend used to have a place down in Ogden Dunes, and she since sold it. But she got to be good friends with people down there, and so have I. And it's somewhat like a, I'll say it's an old hippie colony, for lack of a better term. And but a lot of these people are either engineers or they all teach at Purdue University, the one down there. So it's not like they're a bunch of dummies. They're real, real smart. And what I wanted to talk to both of you guys about, because Carl's kind of an expert on these numbers, and Jeff, I think you have a better sense of what's going on in this area than anybody, even me, for God's sake. It seems to me that when the numbers, the labor numbers go down, it's always been that the government has a real problem counting people that they don't normally count. It may sound stupid, but In other words, if the three of us had a construction site where all of a sudden we decided to build houses because things were so good, most of the people that we pay, even if we're paying them by check and not cash, because it's hard to do that anymore, they don't really know that those guys are working until the end of the year to get a 1099, right? I mean, we might have them on salary, but we probably don't. And so when things are good, things are actually better, in my estimation, than the numbers tell you. And when things are crappy, it's kind of just the opposite. And I was talking to these guys. One of the guys came over and he was playing some music for the, you know, reasonable-sized birthday party. And I was saying, well, how's it in your world? And he goes, oh, God. He goes, I mean, I'm still teaching, but the band hasn't played in 4 months. Because everybody I know that does, like, weddings or anything like that, they haven't done anything. The caterers are out. I mean, he says to me, before I even say, he goes, none of those people are counted. They're just out. And he goes, there's bars that do karaoke two nights a week or something. They're out. I mean, and now yesterday, somebody, one of the listeners, wings across me a piece of paper that says, for the first time ever, if you add together the column that Carl and I always argue about, we don't know what people are doing, and the people that are officially unemployed, that's now 47% of the workforce. It's like never been that high. I mean, what's the number? I'll ask Jeff first, and then Carl. What's the number that we can't sustain? I mean, that means we have. You know, are we at the point here where things are really that much worse than we're even seeing? And if so, can we come back, and how?
Well, I guess that reminds me back of your CPI number question. You know, it starts with accepting the data. You know, same thing with COVID-19 is accepting the data because that's the only thing you have really to work with. And I think where the unemployment data is most vulnerable right now is with respect to furloughed workers. They don't know how to count them. They don't know how to count them as being in the ranks of the employed or the unemployed. And, you know, furloughed workers, you know, right now that's, in the last reporting period alone, the last labor numbers, there was 3 million furloughed workers that they didn't know how to count. Because they don't know what's going to happen with these workers. Will they be called back to work or not? And I think that's one area of vulnerability that the Bureau of Labor Statistics has even identified. So who knows how many other, you know, potential problems there are, particularly while employment is in such flux right now. So I guess my simple answer would be these, you know, just like a market until it settles in periods of extreme volatility. You have high labor number volatility right now. These numbers need to settle first. And what we're seeing right now, these snapshots cannot truly be representative of what the actual number is. But I won't even begin to tell you where I think those numbers might be, or whether they be higher or lower. I think the good point is to be cynical and skeptical of the numbers we're seeing right now, because of the volatility associated with them.
Well, there is actually a group, Carl, you're the one who I think told me, there's another group that actually tries to estimate the amount of, what do they call it? So it's like the birth and death of businesses, where they try and figure
out. Well, yeah, that's in the establishment survey, and it's garbage. It's always been garbage. And even the BLS recognizes it's garbage, that especially, you know, they get what they believe is reasonably close when the labor market is in reasonable stability. Okay, that's, you know, that doesn't do us any good, because when we're really interested in the labor numbers, it's when the market is not stable, right?
Well,
I mean, in one direction or the other, you know, for good or for bad. So, I mean, the idea that, oh, well, we have this model that we think is reasonably accurate if the market's stable. Well, okay, so you just told me that you have a model that's worthless. Thanks a lot, guys. The biggest problem that you have is with trying to nail the answer to the question that you've asked about, okay, where's kind of the critical inflection point on this, is that to a large degree that depends upon the elements of your spending that are non-discretionary, and then you have to add into that the elements that are redistribution that are taxation related. Because if you are in a situation where it is not possible to take your economic surplus, tax it, redistribute it, and have these other people survive, then all you've got left is monetary gains, and eventually that ends in a disaster.
Which was where I think where we're heading, unfortunately.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, it's the part of the problem that we have right now is that we have structural parts of the economy that are making the GDP numbers look better than they really are. And what they're really doing is dissipating funds and forcing people into ever larger borrowing transactions. And that's, you know, you're increasing systemic leverage on a, you know, on a continuous basis. Well, you can't do that without having something blow up.
Well, how big a part of the economy, I mean, either one of you guys, because I've been around this my whole life, and I can't put my finger, how big a part of the economy, even now, is essentially, we know it's there, but it's sort of not counted. I mean, how much is, you know, I mean, some of these weddings are $80,000, and some of the people, the caterers and those people in the band, if there's no wedding, I don't think you counted them in the first place until you get to the end of the year to 1099. And if it doesn't happen, you're not counting them now either. I just get this feeling that that the numbers right now are, in my the way I look at it, on the shall we say the undercurrent of the economy is doing worse than the ones they're counting, and that's bad. I mean, because I think it's still a pretty good piece of the economy, even if it's 10% or 15%.
Yeah, it's very difficult to, you know, to get enough granularity on data like this to actually even have a decent guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which makes me nervous. I mean, we seem like in this day and age we're supposed to have all this data, Jeff. We don't seem to have crap, do we? I mean, look at the COVID. Carol and I were talking about it before. I just think that when we start talking about it, now, these guys are saying that these schools are all going down. That these regional, I don't know if I sent it out to everybody last week. I think that they're saying the schools that are seriously in trouble, and this in effect minorities more than that, are the regional colleges. That the Illinois will be okay, but Northern Illinois, not so hot. You know, the University of Wisconsin Whitewater, maybe not so hot. Those kinds of places, I mean, what if we get, you know, 30 of those things folded? I mean, I don't know, how do you come back from that?
That's a good point. The schools really rely on these tuitions, except for the private institutions, of course, who have these massive billion-dollar endowments that are sitting looking good and still intend to continue to charge same tuition rates even if it's from a remote, you know, remote schooling. But, no, that's just another... It's another element that's likely to drop soon. You know, going back to your question about unemployment rate, I think it's just really difficult to classify furloughed workers right now. You know, these, I think they're called U6 is the designation, but I'm not certain on that. And there's a lot of variability there. There's about 17 million workers who potentially could fall into that category. It's one thing, true, that another 6 million workers left the labor force in the last report. So while this data is in flux so much, it's really hard to get a handle on true unemployment. And then you have, you know, PPE expiring just in the last couple of days. The first round, I'm sorry, PPP, not PPE, but some of the payments that were contingent upon maintaining 75% of your payroll, which kept people on the payrolls, those expired. The first round expired June 30th, which was the first obligation to keep those people on the payroll for a three-month period. So there should be a round of additional layoffs and unemployment claims that will spike as a result of having just passed June 30th. That next extension comes again in July, and then there's another one in October. So there's going to be a lot of volatility on labor numbers coming forward. Because, you know, restaurants that have shut down, you know, they took the money, They paid people for 3 months as they were obligated to maintain 75% of their employees under 3 months of payment. But the day that obligation ended, they'll pocket the rest of the cash and shut down, as many have. And, you know, we have to see what that tally looks like.
What is, either one of you know, Carl is my expert. If somebody, I know some people like this, they're sent home, they're furloughed, they're not getting paid, so they're getting unemployment, but yet the firm is still paying their hospitalization. Is that hospitalization, was that good for the PPE? In other words, even though the person's on unemployment, can they count the hospitalization as payroll?
I mean, not technically, but there, you know, as he's pointing out, there is a lot of fuzzy math going on in the numbers right now. One of the problems is, you know, like, for example, my daughter, the gym she worked at got forcibly shut down by DeSantis in Florida. And not only did she not get any of the unemployment for quite a long time, although now she's told me that, you know, she got a couple of checks, okay? And now she's back to work. Of course, you know, they gave it to her, you know, a month and a half in arrears. Gee, how'd you pay your rent during that time, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But the other thing is, I have absolutely no idea how that sort of situation showed up in the data, or if it did, because she was not in the official Florida state numbers because they were never cutting her any checks.
Mm-hmm. Well, she
wasn't working. Okay, so I mean, you know, and the thing is, where is that, you know, where's the quality of the data collection when you've got that sort of gamesmanship going on? You have states that, you know, Congress passes this thing that you get the $600 a week, which I think is a terrible policy and a terrible law because it ends up paying people more than, you know, than they'd be making if they were working. But the fact is they did it. Then you have states that are gaming their own systems because of budgetary pressures. They would have to pay out from the regular claims. If they don't pay anybody, they don't have to pay. So now they've got a temporary, you know, makes their numbers look better temporarily. But that ends up filtering through into the BLS data. And then the question is, if you get the phone call from the household survey, do you report yourself as being unemployed?
Yeah, I mean, it's
I don't know. I mean, you know, and that's the problem with all these distortions is how do you tease that out of the data and then say, okay, you know, what we've got is actually usable.
Well, they also have, I use the term lazied up in the sense that the minute you fall off the unemployment rolls, they don't consider you unemployed anymore, right?
Because if you give up.
Sure.
Then you're not employed. But again, the only thing I've ever cared about in terms of the health of the employment market is the employment population ratio. Because in terms of being able to actually sustain government programs and sustain government funding, that's the only number that matters.
Now, what's that different than the number I just gave you? Where I added the people not working and the unemployed together and divided them by the population. Is that what you're talking about?
No, it's employment population is the employed number ratio to the non-institutional working population.
Okay. Well, that's
the simple one because those are the only people who pay taxes.
All right. Well, we're down to 137 million of those, right? From 160, 150.
Yeah, that's a very bad number, and the spike that came out of there erased, you know, everything plus from what we've had from 09 forward.
What you know? What else is somewhat bizarre is I mean, again, I'm beating up on these people from Indiana, but they said, "Well, thank God for like Amazon," and I said, "Well, what are you thanking them for?" Well, good. They, you know, they bring me all my stuff, and they said, "Well, you know, you're going to get a bill for that." And they go, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, your brick and mortar guy's closed. He's paying property taxes. Okay, so you got to make that up." And oh, by the way, Amazon doesn't really pay sales tax. And they said, oh, no, now they absolutely do. They didn't for a while. Like about a decade. I said, but now, I said, 50% of their business is still third party, and they don't collect on that either. If ever you want to be the biggest knothead that ever walked on earth, you're sitting with a people with a bunch of adult beverages, and say, by the way, you know, you still owe those taxes. The whole room just silent. It goes silent. What do you mean? Amazon, you don't have to. No. They don't collect them. You're supposed to send them in. The place just goes dead, and they really wished you were some other place. I mean, do people not realize that, or do they just hope they don't have to realize it, or what? That if you buy a TV from Amazon instead of the Best Buy out of state, you're supposed to send, you know, Uncle Jay a check. I mean, is this absolutely...
Yeah, that doesn't happen.
No.
it doesn't happen, so I'm with them. I don't consider that to be a real liability I'm tracking, because when was the last time somebody came collecting for that?
The question is, why not?
Well...
No, why don't they
gave,
collect?
An exemption to an entire industry, an online industry, that used that exemption to bury brick-and-mortar retail, so... You know, I mean, it's already done its damage.
I think this is one of those cases in that if a governor ever decided to do it, he's probably going to find, and he takes a list of 1,000 worst violators, he's liable to find his wife on there or something. Or friends of his. I mean, you would think that a state that's broke would worry about something like this, right? Because how do you make money? You make money on property taxes, on sales taxes, right? And you now have the biggest retailer that doesn't pay them, right? And by the way, they're screwed all the people who pay the property tax. I mean, you would think even if these guys, all they cared about was the money, they'd wake up, right? I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's unconscionable to me that's. I mean, you guys are sounding like you're frequent violators or something. Nobody wants to agree with me here at all, but I mean,
no. Are you telling me you're sending in checks every year for that for those sales taxes?
What I'm saying is, I bought one thing on Amazon 10 years ago, and I had a bad experience, and I've never bought anything since.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the interesting things is that years ago, when I ran my internet company, the state of New York sent me a very threatening letter demanding. Anyone who was a customer of ours that happened to live in New York, which was really stupid because we were a Chicago company and we served the Chicago area, but they were fishing for sales tax violators in their own state, of course. And after talking to the corporate legal people and coming to the conclusion that we had no nexus, we had absolutely no liability, and they had no jurisdiction, I photoed a copy of a picture of my butt and sent that back to my answer.
God.
but there are states that get very aggressive about this sort of thing. California's known for it. New York's known for it. So, I wouldn't be surprised if Pritzker's at least trying to figure out how to do it.
Well, I mean, it's just off the red. Didn't what's his name go to jail for that? For winging the paintings down to New Jersey? Hollinger? The guy from
You can get tagged for it if you run a business, then and you do any kind of tangible personal property. We used to have the Illinois people come in and harass us all the time. We had office audits every couple of years, and it's one of the reasons I'll never open another retail establishment that sells anything that's tangible. Like people that wanted me to do mugs and T-shirts and stuff like that during the crash, and I said absolutely not, because if I'd done it, I would have had to register. State of Florida, and then once you do that, then you're exposed to that nonsense.
We had a guy come here to the office of PTI, Jeff, get a load of this, from the city. Want to know where we bought all our stuff. We've seen it at our place. We don't have a whole lot of stuff.
Yeah.
They want to go through every receipt, and it just so happened, I have a chiropractor out in New Orleans, everybody does. He actually advertised on the show. And on the way back, I'd stop at the Sam's Club in Hodgkin's, and I'd buy, you know, pop and water and stuff, and we used to do a lot of seminars back then. I'd buy the rolls and the donuts and stuff. And it turned, thank God that the Sam's Club had the different tax rates versus food versus other stuff. Because we came in, we did something like 51% of our regular buying in Chicago. And if we didn't do 50, it was like a big fine. I mean, I had no idea that if I bought a computer at the Sam's Club in Hodgkin's versus Chicago, I mean, I knew that if they came in and everything we did was bought from Amazon and we didn't pay a nickel, and they actually looked at us, I mean, I know we were liable for something. I never even dawned on me that if you bought something, you know, in Evergreen Park, that the city would be after you. I was talked about Shaq, Carol. At least I know I'm liable for the other. I had no idea that if I bought my computer in Hodgkins, it cost me $200, and I owe the city like a dollar and a half because of the difference.
Oh yeah, they do this kind of stuff all the time. We used to have them, like I said, these guys from the state, and the city of Chicago. They used to come in, they'd show up, and we had a little protocol for those guys because at the time you could smoke behind closed office doors, and I had my number one loved really good cigars. So, we had fun with them on a regular basis.
Carl, thank you very much, buddy. We'll talk at you soon. Jeff, you'll be back after the break here.
I will. Sure.
S&P futures now down 5. It's good having you guys together because talk about different universes you guys come from, and it's interesting. There's some definite, cohesion of thought there, shall we say. S&P futures down 6, NASDAQ futures down 950. We were down, we were up, and now we're down. This is all over, but not much this morning after a big update yesterday. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, everybody. It's Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom. She's AV. Angelica Rosenko on the board. S&P futures down 11 now. We've ducked here. NASDAQ futures down 24. Dow futures now down 61. The only stack, Boeing's down 550. They were up a bunch yesterday. So they're the ones that are, they're moving the Dow all over the place because that's a 40 points right there. They're of the 60. Over in Europe, we were up a bunch. Now we're not. DAX only up 29 now, 0.2. FTSE actually dropped. They're down 43 now, 0.6%. CAC ran down 7.16%, so not much going on there. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 293, 1.3%. Shanghai up 23.8%. Hang Seng up 125.5%. Bonds, 10-year yield 0.62, so that's down one basis point. Bund minus 0.48, but look at this one. Japan positive 0.035. I got to go back and find out when it was that high. They've been negative for a real long time. Oil is down 67 cents, 39.04. Brent up down 61 cents, 41.10. Natural gas up 3 cents, 174. Again, almost a 30 cent move off the low there in less than a week. That's spectacular in that contract. RBOB is 118, unchanged on the day. Gold now down $3, 17.78. Silver up 2 cents, 18.08. AV, what do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Good morning, friends. 73 degrees currently in Chicago. Partially cloudy, but mainly Tuesday will remain sunny. Scattered storms are possible today, mainly across northeast Illinois and northwest Indiana. No rain expected at night. The highest of the day will be 80, and then at night it will drop till 69. 76 degrees in Phoenix. Hot and dry Tuesday, the sky will remain clear and sunny. The highest of the day is 100 and the low 75. In traffic, we have the accident reported on Dan Ryan East before Roosevelt Road, so traffic is jammed from Armitage into downtown as a result of the crash. Use the express lanes to save you some time. Chief?
Jeff, we got Goldman Sachs says a national mask mandate could slash infections and save the economy from a 5% hit. Now, what incredible research do you think they have behind that headline?
You have to run that by me one more time. Our volume's a little low right now, so I didn't hear you.
Goldman Sachs says a national mask mandate could slash infections and save economy from a 5% hit. What research do you think they have behind that? Any?
Well, that's a good one, seeing as how the only research I was available that I was aware of was that the virus was in a better position to spread indoors than outdoors. So, that just seems to be politics and nothing more. I mean, I don't know why everyone persists on trying to make masks a political issue, but I guess that would, that's what would become of that if you're mandating people to wear masks when they're outdoors and there's nobody around them and they're not in danger of contracting or spreading anything. That seems like another unnecessary political battle while we're fighting over statues and monuments.
Did you ever have? I know you're very tight with your parents, Jeff, like I was, and my grand. I bet you had a grandmother somewhere that said, "That's why people shouldn't have that much time on their hands." As mine used to say that once. So, I mean, the idea is anybody at home with nothing to do. I mean, one of my Notre Dame buddies are now all over. They're reading biographies of Ulysses S. Grant, which always had his bad reputation, but now evidently recent history has shown that he was actually quite a visionary in a lot of ways. And so this whole stuff with the Confederate statues and all this other stuff, And I, well, first of all, I mean, I anything that bespokes of the slavery, I could see getting the Confederate flag off state flags and stuff. I mean, I'm kind of with that. But the idea that now the people go back and, like, research people's histories, and if they were, like, a bad person, even if they did something positive, that somehow or another, we gotta like, wipe them out of history or something. This is like something Stalin would do. Is there a part in the Bible that says he is without sin, cast the first stone? I mean, we're not only worried about people now doing stuff we don't like them to do, worried about people from like 800 years ago.
Of course, standards were completely different.
I'm not asking the question whether, you know, Columbus and these guys are good people. I'm sure they weren't. But why do we even care? I mean, the guy had the stones to get on a little ship and go across the ocean when you and I wouldn't have done it. We're celebrating that. We never said the guy took a bath. We never said he didn't stink. We never said he was nice to kids. I mean, all we said was he accomplished something. I mean, why can't we just leave it at that?
Well, that's very true. And as you said, there's really nobody that can withstand that scrutiny. And in the manner in which it's being selectively applied, then, you know, is just part of the hypocrisy. Because if you want to move those standards of reevaluating someone's history over to the arts, we're going to lose all our artists, they be the composers or the great masters, you know, the painters. Because when you look carefully at their lives, you know, misogyny and would be the least of their problems. So we can't apply these standards to it. Just doesn't make any sense. What's interesting to me, I think, about that argument more is how willing people are just to step aside of this. You know, I get it, and I agree with you with respect to, you know, the Confederate flag. It shouldn't be a symbol that's accepted anywhere. But when you speak to monuments and statues, you're really speaking about culture, art, and history, and the respect for the arts itself and the time it takes for, you know, for somebody to create these works of art. And the history, good or bad, remember, history isn't supposed to be good by definition. History is just a timeline. It contains good and bad. You can't, you know, I don't even understand the purpose of attempting to erase it. And it's just ironic that there's nobody that wants to be, because they're afraid of the mob, you know, nobody that wants to be a voice of reason here and really take a stand on that. I think Democratic leadership is particularly vulnerable right now in their hypocrisy. They're really, you know, I mean, with all of Trump's obvious flaws as a human being and as a leader, you don't step aside and while anarchists are destroying public property.
No.
And do it simply because there's political expediency and political gain to be offered as a result of that. I think the Democrats really have to take a good hard look
at what they're
trying to accomplish here.
You can't have a person who is so hypocritical that she's going to fire a policeman for flipping somebody off, and yet she's perfectly in her rights to say F you to the president. How that even begins to be a public figure or anybody who's welcome on the show, for God's sake, I can't even begin to go there. And I know if anybody lobs this out there and tweets, they'll be after me. But what do these people look in a mirror and do they see Adonis or what? I mean, everybody makes mistakes. Everybody, but I mean, you have to. I never thought I was judged differently than other people. Maybe that's why I'm not a politician. But this is just crazy. What are we doing here? John Wayne, because he was in a Playboy article. Now everybody knew John Wayne was a very right wing guy. I mean, and as much as I liked him in movies, I'm not sure I would have agreed with the man on anything. But that doesn't mean that for that time and space that he was responsible for a lot of people having jobs and B movies and stuff that probably wouldn't have had them. You celebrate the good stuff in people. I mean, if you take the negative out of anybody, God, we're going nowhere. I mean, maybe because you and I are, I never even say something like this. Maybe because you and I are a little maybe more observant. I wasn't going to say educated because that doesn't really mean anything, but people of enormous talent. It's almost like everybody's given the same amount of stuff, Jeff. I mean, you tell me I'm wrong here, or AV, that if somebody's dramatically brilliant in some area, they seem like they almost pay for it somewhere else. I mean, Solomon and Lincoln were both had incredible bouts of depression to go with their brilliance. Now, other people, you know, they're much more even keeled. They're probably not as talented in some areas. They probably don't have the problems in other areas. A lot of people who are incredibly brilliant in one area, God, you wouldn't want them putting your air conditioner in, for God's sake, right? I mean, the thing would be, God knows where they'd put it. But I mean, a lot of people that have incredible genius. What if Einstein would have been a closet, you know, I don't know what he could have been, any slaves over there or anything. I mean, a closet pedophile. I mean, he wasn't, thank God, but we're going to say that all his physics was wrong? I don't know where you go with this. I mean, what I'm saying is, if we start demanding perfect people, boy, the line's going to be pretty short.
Well, it's true. And then that's the hypocrisy we're dealing with. But, you know, another way that illustrates it would be with respect to rap music would be a perfect example. There's nothing more misogynist than the lyrics of rap music. They're despicable, generally speaking, and I know that because I'm a fan of the genre. I know that because I listen to the music. I like the artist. I like the sound, and I'm a music fan. And so I know these songs well. I'm not speaking as an old guy that is not familiar with this category. I'm very familiar with it. Throw in a couple of teenage kids, and I'm even more familiar with it. But the lyrics are reprehensible, and they embody everything that those who are claimed to be woke should be appalled by and should be literally burning their albums. But that doesn't occur. So those hypocrisies become really apparent to people after a while, and the result is they'll take none of this seriously, and I think that's what we're dealing with. I don't take any of this seriously.
When do you get,
you know, none at all?
Well, when do you get, Jeff, the something that turns into a good, healthy debate, something that maybe should be brought out and open and discussed, and when something just becomes. Now the way seems to me the information is getting around, it's getting around in a bad way. I don't know that it comes out healthy. I mean, this whole thing, we were talking yesterday, I don't know if you listened in, but about the policemen in the schools. Now, okay. Evidently, the Chicago Public Schools pays the police department $33 million to put people in the schools. Now, I would say that that's a lot of money. And we'll have to find out. We've been doing this now for, what, a decade, 8 years or whatever. I don't see that it's a problem at all to get people that can keep their mouth shut for a minute and get in a room, which is hard to find these days. I would have somebody like you or Carl or Kevin or somebody that has an ounce of brains and can be sober about something. Let's sit down in a room with 10 people. You don't need 50 because then you got nothing except people trying to make headlines. And have no newspaper people in and say, okay, why exactly are the police in the place? Are they to protect the school from the outside, a la Sandy Hook? Are they there in case some kids, you know, today a lot of kids are drug going to school. I'm not saying that they have, what if kid doesn't take his medication, he starts winging a thing with the teacher, is that the policeman's check? I mean, what exactly are we doing here? Has it worked? Do we need them everywhere? Some schools yes, some schools no. Are they there to make arrests? Are they there to stop somebody running in the door with an automatic weapon? Are they there to be the dean of discipline because we don't have one of those anymore? What exactly are we doing, and is the payment number correct? I mean, it's time for a review on all this stuff. You know, the people that are demonstrating, they're correct. There's time for a review on a lot of stuff. But the question is, can everybody shut up long enough to put 10 people in a room that actually only care about this thing becoming okay? Be better than it is now, and can we judge the report they come out with? And not, you know, we have to debate it. Don't take it verbatim, but and say, does this make sense? Should we move in this direction? Maybe we need policemen in in half the schools. Maybe we really don't need them in grammar schools anymore. But now, what's the protocol if somebody does walk in the front door? Well, you can't kick the policeman out of there and not pay him and have 15 calls a day to kids that show up hopped up to school. Well, okay, now you're just not paying them and expect them to be here every 5 minutes. Where are we going with this stuff? And it seems like there's no rational thought process, even as the policeman's test. I mean, Maddie Weber will tell you, 85% of the money now is stolen online. Well, do we still have the same old policeman's test where the guy or lady's going to be out on the beat, or should there be a Chicago police unit that deals with cybercrime? And oh, guess what? You go to Illinois University of Chicago or Notre Dame or Richard J. Daley College, where the hell you're going, and you hire 40 people that have actually some knowledge in computers and how people are doing this stuff, and you don't ever expect them to be out on the street. Or no, we can't do that. I mean, what if we're setting this up today, what would it look like? I mean, why can't we? We need these debates at virtually every level of society all the time, ongoing, because things change.
That's right. Yeah. And the one size fits all approach doesn't work. You're right. It's at the local level. You have to take a look at, you know, but the forces of the forces are strong, though. I was involved in a similar conversation about the schools within my community. I have two students that were in private school, two children that were in private school, K through 12, and some public school, but mostly private. And then when it came to high school, they go to Evanston Township High School, ETHS. And Evanston, as you know, is an extremely, extremely diverse community, from in every manner, maybe not so much diversity in thought, but every other element of diversity comes into play in Evanston, socioeconomic diversity, every actual layer of diversity. And it's one of the things that's very attractive. It's an extraordinary high school, and it's been a great experience for them. But it's a dangerous school, and not a single day in that school doesn't include some fight somewhere in the school, as both my students, both of my kids have told me. Yet, you know, you sit through a round of parents in a recent conversation saying how police have to come out of the schools. So then the question is, well, how are those fights resolved? Well, teachers aren't going to do that. You know that for certain. Well, then maybe private security. Private security creates even a larger accountable problem. I don't think anybody actually thinks these things out.
No.
You know, when they, you know, I mean, it's a wonderful school and it's been a great experience, but it requires police in that school. And that's Evanston, that's a suburban school. I can imagine what some of the inner city schools must have to deal with to, you know, create an environment that enables learning, or at the very least attendance. So, you know, I don't think anybody thinks these things through. You know, they're just reacting in a knee-jerk manner, in a manner of which they feel they're supposed to be reacting without actually giving considerable thought.
Well, you never want to get the facts getting away with a good story, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I mean, you wonder what is, you know, there was a lady saying that her daughter got in a fight somewhere and she got arrested at school. Now she's been, you know, marred for life or something. Well, I don't know. I wasn't there. I didn't see it. But I mean, coming from a school where you never did anything like that. Okay, the place was like an armed camp without the arms, with the brothers. Plus, all they had to do is kick the kid out, and the parents paid for it, and that was hell to pay too. You didn't want that. You know, your parents wrote a check, and 2 days later, you're back home. That would not have been a good idea. But, I mean, All of this comes from, is there a family? Is there not a family? I really do think that somehow in these areas, we have to think outside the box a little bit. And we have to find ways to get some of these kids out of these areas in the summertime.
Yeah.
And with other people, well, maybe even from other parts of the country. Let's go to a national park. Let's see if we can, or even the forest preserve. Let's see if we can take 2 square miles and clean out the underbrush, plant a bunch of stuff. Let's see if we can increase the oxygen bloom in this area over 2 years and have, you know, somebody there testing it and stuff. I mean, there's ways. I don't see any ideas or plans. Although there are ideas and plans that don't get out at all. Jeff. There's a school in Englewood, Lindblom. These guys have Lindblom Math and Science Academy now. It's one of the top schools in the state. In this horrible neighborhood. And somehow or another, I don't know if the police or the principal or whoever the hell, somebody had the stones, the gangs don't touch these kids. They get off the bus and walk the block and a half. I don't think anybody's ever a problem. Now, how do we have these little blooms of success here, and we can't make them more, you know? Yeah, now, I mean, this what's going on here during these weekends, I mean, this is insanity. I mean, and anybody who thinks that we're, like, over-policed, if anything, we're under-policed. I mean,
and that's the real, you know, the schools, I think, is a secondary issue. Let's talk about the real crisis right now. I've spoken with a half a dozen Chicago policemen in the last 3 weeks. People I know personally and spoken to confidentially, yes, they are toying with the blue flu. Absolutely. There's a level of frustration and disengagement among Chicago policemen that is just at a record level. Of course, yet we all accept it's true that the vast majority of policemen are good people. They're not like that criminal that ended George Floyd's life. So how do these people feel going to work every day? And the answer is they feel terrible, and they're completely disengaged. It was bad enough years ago where the ACLU in Chicago began this contact report, whereby if you made contact with anybody, any form of engagement by a police officer in Chicago resulted in having to complete a 3-page questionnaire back at the station at the end of your shift, describing the engagement and what happened, what was the cause of it. It took a good 25 minutes for what could have been a 3-minute conversation, and all it did was increase an officer's liability. So the result of that, as everybody knows, and nobody will dispute, is that police officers in Chicago began to disengage. There would be less prophylactic policing. They would not stop people. They would not just engage in community policing, which is really, you know, always cited as the goal. So there's less interaction with the community in general because they'd have to count and document every interaction. Well, now it's, of course, at a worse level. I mean, they don't want to go to work. They don't feel like they're being supported at all. They know what their liability is. If there's anything, they will turn their head, first and foremost now, instead of react as they would have in the past. And I just wonder, does anyone really blame them? How can you not feel that way? If you have a friend or a family member who's a policeman in Chicago, you look at the world very, very differently. These are people that, you know, like teachers, went in to make a difference. It's not because they couldn't do anything else. That's what they chose to do. And for a long time, they felt good about going to work. They don't feel good about going to work any longer. And they don't have the lobby, you know, that teachers have afforded for so long, that, you know, a rotten teacher can exist forever and not get fired. So I just wonder if people are really giving any thought. And of course, you know, you're seeing a direct result of that. This is an idle conjecture. In Baltimore, in Chicago, in New York City, in the last 4 weeks, murders and violent crimes have spiked. They have skyrocketed materially. There's no reason to expect that this trend's not going to change either.
We're one step away from total anarchy here. I mean, we certainly are on the streets. Yesterday, my dentist was back working, believe it or not. I hustled down to the south side to get my teeth clean. And, of course, I'm on the Ryan, and we're getting some traffic now, so it's not like it's Sunday morning like it was there for a while. And all of a sudden, some bleep, you know, everybody's doing 70. This guy's going maybe 110, 105 in some SUV, blows by me, almost hits me, and it's this African-American guy. It doesn't matter. It could have been anybody. Well, he must have changed lanes. I mean, he couldn't just go 100 miles an hour because there were people in every lane. So he's flying through cars, almost hitting everybody. I'm sitting there going, there is zero chance of this guy getting pulled over. Zero. And I really hope that somehow or another he clips, you know, a guardrail or something to where nobody else gets killed and he doesn't really get hurt. But something has to happen here to wake this guy up. I mean, it's not like, I mean, I just, you know, in order, I hope he doesn't hurt anybody else. He doesn't hurt himself, but he needs to stop what he's doing. I mean, this is crazy, because you couldn't do this every day and not kill somebody after the end of a week. So, I mean, but I asked the question yesterday, and I'll ask you, because you're more in tune to the Chicago stuff. Have you ever seen the Hey Jackass site? The police will tell you that the black community, where 80-some percent of the violence is, will say, and even though they're 25% of the population, now that's not an indictment, that's just a number, okay? They will say that nobody will help out. All right, now, let's take that as a given. Nobody will, but now, if you and I are the person who's supposed to be helping out, and you see something like 88% of the shootings don't even have a suspect, well, the chances of you willing to help the police that are doing, well, I won't say them, let's say a horrible job is being done of collecting any of these guys. I gotta believe they're guys, even though we don't know where they are, they could be some ladies. Why would I ever tell on somebody if I don't think there's a chance you're going to arrest them? I mean, clearly, if I talked to Matt Dillon on Gunsmoke and told him I saw Carl running away from the saloon with a gun in his hand, we'd know for sure that Matt Dillon wouldn't arrest until Carl was in jail, right? And I was safe again.
Let's get a posse.
Yeah, in other words, which comes first, the chicken or the egg? I mean, there's a community, and who are we listening to? If you drive through that community, if you came down today, we took a drive through there, because I do once in a while. I used to live in those areas. We're going to find a bunch of gangbangers. We're going to find people selling dope. We're going to find aldermen or people, you know, screaming from the highest heart yard arm that the police are the problem. And then we're going to see on every block four or five or six houses of, like, regular people that are trying to live there. Nobody cares about those people. I mean, they don't seem to have any rights whatsoever. Mm-hmm. How they manage to hang there, you know, with the flowers planted in the front lawn and stuff. Jeff, how could somebody do that? I mean, obviously they can't afford to move somewhere else. But there's still real people in these areas that who talks about them at all? Just saying.
So play this out. Where does this go? Does this intensify this summer?
Without a doubt. Unfortunately, yeah. We have not hit bottom yet. But my question is, can we at least be gathering the people together to sit in a room for 3 weeks and say, how do we start this? What do we do? Is it more police? I mean, if this area has a drug guy in a corner every day, do we arrest him every single time he comes out until he's gone? I mean, what do we do? I don't know. I'm not a criminologist, but to me, it seems like if I have a drug dealer in front of my house all the time, I can't call the police, because all of a sudden something's going to happen to me, and oh, by the way, the guy's still out there. We're either going to make a determination to clean these areas up, or we're not. I'm not saying we should do it by beating people up or by stopping and frisking, but somehow or another, it's not working. And I don't know the answer, but if we don't look for it, we're not going to find it, is I guess where I'm going with this. But I have a feeling that in America, we can come up with the answer. I mean, I still believe that here, even though we don't seem to be able to find a way for someone to visit their parents in a nursing home. I don't know how that could be after months, but we still can't do that. We seem to have lost something here. Did we lose our mojo someplace?
So how did Cuomo get to be spiking the football with respect to his, speaking of nursing homes, when you count New Jersey and New York deaths, that exceeds that of France, Italy, and Spain.
Yep.
From the virus.
3-0.
Yet he's spiking the football as being, you know, as someone who's properly combated this, even though, you know, he had 40% deaths in nursing homes, you know, just so how does that happen? You know, what is it about his celebrity that gave him such an extraordinary pass?
You get ahead of the news and you stay on it, and it's exactly what the big lie is defined in Mein Kampf. You keep telling the lie and people believe it. Jeff, we got a dash, buddy. As usual, good stuff. Give us a quick plug for Luckbox.
Getluckbox.com. It's free. It's an award-winning magazine, and this month features Stephanie Kelton and Modern Monetary Theory on the cover in an exclusive interview that comes out July 1st, and all you have to do is go to getluckbox.com and receive the digital editions for free.
Are you guys still doing the printed?
Of course. We're doing the print. Yes, we have print subscribers. Print subscribers, of course, are paid, you know, 10 issues a year. And then we also have our podcast, The Political Trade, which features political guests that are making bets about political prediction markets. So that's called The Political Trade. Recent guests include Scaramucci, Carville, Rachel Bitticoffer, most recently Dylan Radigan a couple days ago.
Hey, good for you.
So like that's worth listening to as well.
I remember him from the show. He was on a... Yeah, he was... Anyway...
He had an amazing prediction about the VP race. He said that he knew that Biden was going to pick the most... I'll keep that as a tease. He has an amazing prediction on that he has 100% certainty who the VP is going to be and for the reasons why. So it's worth listening to The Political Trade to find out who Biden's VP pick is going to be.
I'm going to be very Luddite that I am, and I'm going to get a print copy. I'm going to sit on the porch this weekend, and I'm going to read it.
That sounds great. All right.
Take care, I'll see you next week.
All
right. That's the Futures Down 7. There's the Futures Down 23. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks. Thank you, Avi.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.